Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, February 24th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it leads to comments and questions and testimonials. And if you have any of those, we encourage you to give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone, and we can have a conversation. Also on that page, you'll find links to a whole series of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either called in with testimonials or been stepped through the worksheet process or had powerful questions that help them understand this process more deeply so that it's easier to get the results they can get when they apply the tools in their lives. I say tools plural because the Reality Management Worksheet is just one of a whole host of tools that are available through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice right there on that website. There are other tools like the Three Early Memories of Conflict, the Mind Goal Management Worksheet, the Responsibility Communication Tool that comes from the lecture Dr. Rice has titled, Did You Hear What I Think I Said? And he has, I think it used to be 14 or 15. Now he's probably got closer to 20 different videos that you can purchase. He's also got all kinds of things you can watch on the YouTube channel associated with his name and the website, including something we haven't mentioned in quite a while, which is there's a PowerPoint presentation that was compiled by Dr. Rice with the help of Bill Cosentino, who's, you know, his business work had him doing a lot of work with PowerPoint, so he was a PowerPoint expert, and he worked with Dr. Rice for, I think it was over a year, to try and get all the wording down and make sure it was an appropriate representation of the work. And Michael introduces that by saying, this PowerPoint contains the accumulated wisdom that he's pieced together over 35 years of working with this concept and these tools. And the more you watch that video, the easier it gets to understand how you can get maximum benefit from this tool. So again, just one of the many different tools that are available. And I consider that video, the PowerPoint presentation, one of the tools, because not only does he introduce the concepts and how they might work and help these tools be effective, but he actually talks about doing a worksheet on a real thing that was going on in his life at the time. And also, you can go to mindshiftersacademy.org as a website, and you can find resources there related to these tools. You can also go there and get information about how to join us for our support groups that run on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And insofar as this is a Thursday, there'll be another support group tonight. So we'd be happy to have you join us or pass that information along to somebody you think might benefit. Please remember there's a separate sign-in page, separate login information for Tuesday and separate for Thursday. It doesn't really work very well. People have tried it, but you can't log into the Tuesday group with Thursday's information and vice versa. So that's the intro. I will step back into The Way of Mastery, Lesson 4, reading the lessons with commentary, unless someone has a question and raises a hand or has a suggestion at 563-999-3581. Blog Talk Radio has been having some technical challenges lately, and that's evidenced by the fact that there's no chat room access. So if you're sitting in the chat room asking questions, please forgive us or use the forgiveness process if you generate upset with that. Pardon our lack of ability to respond because Blog Talk Radio is having technical problems. So yesterday we left off reading the Lesson 4 right after we talked about one of the things that stirs up a lot of negative response from people in this lesson. It says, the only relationship that holds any value at all is your relationship with your creative source. You might call it God, you might call it light, you might call it Jesus, you might call it Holy Spirit. But that's the only relationship that holds any value for you at all. And the book understands that right away when we say something like that, your mind is going to say, but wait a minute, what about all these people in my life? What about my children? What about my parents? What about my spouse? And the book says you can come up with a million examples of relationships that surely have great importance. And then the book comes right back and says, and I quote, the only one that holds value is your relationship with God, with light, with love, with Creator. For when that is in alignment, all of your creations, your choices for relationships, and how you will be within them will flow effortlessly from that alignment. Therefore, seek first the kingdom. Seek first the relationship with your Creator, with all of creation, and all things will be added unto you. Do not try to create a rose by starting with the petals, but nourish the roots, and the flower must blossom. If you are to be in right relationship with your Creator, it is absolutely necessary to correct your perception and relationship with the energy of desire. It begins by releasing your judgment of it in all its forms. For again, as we've mentioned before, you can only be in love or fear. You can't be in both. You can only be in innocence or in judgment. Love and innocence are of the kingdom. Fear and judgment are of illusion. The next section is titled Releasing Judgment of Desire. The text reads, learn then, through simple practice, learn to interrupt the patterns you have learned from this illusory world so that you release judgment of the energy of desire. This will be different for each and every one, depending upon where you begin. Here's a very simple exercise. When you awaken in the morning and you have planted your feet firmly on the floor, take pause and ask yourself this question. What do I want right now? Right away, the mind will say, well, I'm too busy to know what I want. I have to go off to work. I have to serve everybody else. I'm here to satisfy the world. I have no time to ask myself what I want. And just remember, what you decree is. And the thought you hold in the mind will be reflected through the nature of your experience. So, to amplify that a little bit, if you want to create the experience that you are here to serve everybody else and you have no time to slow down and notice what you would like, then you will create that experience. You will create that life experience in the moment over and over and over again. But the third axiom that they gave us said you need do nothing. So if you're from the Western mindset, you don't believe that you need do nothing. You are convinced that you have to survive and you have to have a job to accumulate money and you have to please the people around you. So that's why the whole first two lessons and the beginning of the third lesson we're talking about, please question, please observe for yourself, please understand, you are creating your experience of life. And here it says it again. What you decree is. So if you say, I'm too busy to think about what I really want, I have to be here to satisfy everybody else, I've got all these responsibilities, that's the experience you will create. What they're inviting us to in this chapter is a radical questioning and restructuring of our relationship to the energy of desire and questioning all of the emotional attachments and baggage we have that gets stirred up or presented to our awareness every time somebody talks about desire or we feel desire. So back to this page 47, fourth paragraph down, says, remember that what you decree is, and the thought you hold in the hand, in the mind, will be reflected through the nature of your experience. So pause and ask, what do I want? Then simply give yourself 1 minute to observe whatever comes up in the mind or even is felt in the body. The text reads, heaven forbid you might want to have sex. Oh, and then you would know for certain that you're not a spiritual being. You might want to take a hot shower. You might want a glass of juice or water. You might want to sing. You might want to stretch or breathe. You might want to turn and look at your lover, your mate, still sleeping in the bed. You might want to arise and sneak into your children's room and watch them sleep. You might want to sit down and read the morning paper. The point here is to notice that by asking the question, something will respond within you. And when that response comes, notice that there is a feeling associated with it, a quality that makes your cells sing just a little bit. That is the energy, the elixir of life called desire. In this 1 minute, you do not need to rise to act, but simply observe. Ah, what do I want? To take a hot shower. The feeling of the thought, or the thought that emits the feeling in the body, I want to take a hot shower, is carried on the elixir of desire. Desire is coming from the depth of your being that again rests right next to the face of God, the heart of creation. Might it not be the case that by following the desire that wells up through your heart, by feeling it, by embracing it, you might learn and discover what the ocean is wishing to express through the wave that you are? If you judge desire, might you not be shutting off the creative flow that the mind of the Creator wishes to express? Of course, that is the problem. You have tied the hose in a knot through conflicted judgments. Here is a very common one in your world. Be honest with yourself. How many times have you felt the desire to be wealthy? Is it not something you're supposed to sit around? It is not something that you're supposed to sit around and talk about or make very public, especially if you're trying to be spiritual. You may have thought, I woke up this morning and I just imagined having so many golden coins that I could buy the entire planet. And then you remembered, oh, wait a minute, money is the root of all evil. I can't think that way. Well, I better get busy and go off to my office job that secretly inside I really resent because they don't pay me what my soul is worth. But I'll pretend like I'm quite fine. Oh, money? Oh, no, no, I'm quite fine. Really, I have enough. Really, no, no, I'm quite fine. And then, as you drive home and a Mercedes pulls up alongside you, you cannot help but say, God, I wish I could afford one of those. And then you think, oh, God, I can't have that thought. Oh, I'll just drive my little old Volkswagen down the road. But I'm being a very good spiritual person. The text goes on. Be honest with yourself. How many times have you felt welling up within you the desire to be wealthy? what on earth has caused you to fear that desire? What has caused you to tie the hose in a knot so that you block that desire from coming into manifestation? Perhaps when you were a child, you went off to one of your cathedrals, and there was someone in a long robe standing up on a platform, and because everything looked so beautiful, you thought that surely they must be speaking with authority. Since this cathedral is filled with a whole lot of small little minds that were all living in their own little level of fear, and they said, money is the root of all evil. And you thought, oh, well, that's the truth. Oh, yes, that's the truth. Oh, God, I better fear money. I say unto you, you have one authority, and it is never held within the office of any church or any organization or any one individual. Your authority is the voice for the Creator that dwells within your heart and within your mind. The Creator is not limited and does not require its children to be limited. For if you would receive all that the Creator would give you, you must decide to rise up and be the grandest wave that you could possibly be. For only in so doing do you honor your Creator. You could say that the Creator is like a wise gardener who's constantly trying to grow beautiful roses. She knows exactly how much moisture to put in the soil. She knows how to make those nutrients rise from the soil up through the roots, up through the heart of the stem of the flower to give forth radiant color so that everyone that looks upon it is touched by the mystery of beauty. And the Creator wonders, well, isn't it interesting? These roses that I've created seem to have a mind of their own. As the elixir I tried to give them rises up through the stems, they tie themselves in little knots, and only a little bit of the elixir reaches out. So the petals never quite blossom fully. Have you ever had that feeling that you were putting more energy into staying constricted than you are into allowing expansion? The next heading is, desire links you to the will of the Creator, the will of God. The text reads, desire is creation. Therefore, what you desire is of supreme importance. If you will take the little exercise that we have given you and begin to put it into practice upon awakening in the morning, in a very simple and quiet way, you will begin to get back in touch with the innocence and beauty of the movement of desire. You can delight in it. When you have a sexual thought, a sexual desire, why not just be with it? Why not notice what it causes to happen in the body? How does your breath change? Does the heart beat faster? Be honest with yourself. Is it not putting a smile on your face? What if you decided to honestly embrace that effect as being perfectly innocent and beautiful? How might your day change if you did not repress awareness of sexual desire? You will notice we are not saying that you should walk down the street and grab everybody that walks by you. We are talking about allowing yourself the living embrace of exactly what energy is moving through your being. Why is this important? Well, if you have decided that there are certain energies that are demonic, evil, or have the power to distract you from your union with your Creator, you have already decided there is something beyond the reach of your power. And that is what disempowers you. You take an innocent energy and turn it into a monster that must be feared at all cost. Yet, I say this unto you, the mystical transformation that carries you from feeling yourself to be a disempowered little drop of foam on the edge of a wave and carries you from there to the sense of freedom and empowerment, living, empowered living that flows from the mind of the Creator through you to express only beautiful creations filled with majesty, power, and miracles. That sense of freedom flows on willingness. The feeling of willingness is what carries you to the heart of the mind of the Creator. The willingness to turn to the very energies that move through the mind and the body and not fear them, but instead look upon them with innocence and wonder. This is the source of the myths that have been told in all cultures. The knight that slays the dragon, or kissing the wild beast on the cheek and it becomes a loving companion. Your monsters are what you fear and repress because of the judgments you have learned in the world. And the world, only the denial of the kingdom. The world is the exact opposite of truth. If you're sitting in one of your cathedrals and everyone is saying, sexuality is very bad, it will keep you from God, right away, you should realize if everyone here fears sexuality, it must actually be divine. Allow yourself to think, perhaps I would do well to embrace it, love it, master it, and not fear it. If someone says to you, money is the root of all evil, and then puts out his hand and says, would you please make a donation to our organization? Is that not an expression of conflict? Yet, such conflict permeates the religions and dogmas of your world, which I say, don't desire money, don't desire wealth. By the way, to keep this ministry on this radio station, we really need you to send a donation. So what are they trying to teach you? What are they in denial of? Sex and money. Pretty basic things, are they not? They represent energies that flow from the mind of the Creator, which would express in unlimited joy and power and not be willing to settle for limitation of any kind. When the earth was birthed from the Creator's holy mind and took on its own form and became an entity just like you, the Creator did not say, well, this is a pretty beautiful planet, but I can only have a solar system just large enough for one Earth. Rather, out of joy, the Creator allowed there to come forth solar system upon solar system upon solar system, the birthing of a thousand suns every moment. As a field in which this beautiful jewel of a planet could spin, that is creation. what quality of solar system have you decided to allow in which the planet of your own awareness can spin and live and express? Most people, even the ones really dedicated to a book like this, will just keep reading after a line like that. But I'm going to slow us down and ask, what quality of life, of a solar system, of relationships, have we decided, you and I, each of us individually, collectively as a culture, what quality of solar system have we decided to allow? What is this solar system in which the planet of our awareness spins and lives and expresses itself? I mean, if you just take 2 or 3 minutes to let that sink in, what are you doing? I love one of Guy Finley's talks. He says, you do what you value and nothing else. And so when you're angry, it means you value your anger more than anything else in that moment. When you're sad and depressed, it means you value your sadness and your depression more than anything else in that moment. So essentially in that talk, without using these words, Guy Finley was saying, here's an operational definition for your values and your priorities. What you do is what you prioritize. What you do is what you value. And this book, as a teaching mechanism, asks us to think about what we have decided to allow in our lives, how we are limiting ourselves or expressing and expanding ourselves. Are we allowing light and love and passion? Are we allowing respect? Or are we allowing judgment and anger and frustration and hurt to be the predominant energy in our day? And rather than just keep reading through this book, think about this. If the energy that gave rise to you, that created you as an awareness, as a being, is the same energy that created the universe, the stars, the trees outside your window, the squirrels climbing in the trees, the beautiful flowers that you see in the spring and the summer, if you live in the north. If that energy of creation is what gave rise to you, and the book would say, and I assure you that it is, and then you notice you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment, that's part of how you were created. You were created with, you know, if you've got them, 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 hands, 2 feet, you've also got the infinite capacity to choose what you focus your thoughts on, your conscious awareness in each moment. And built into that system is the dynamic that whatever you focus your conscious awareness upon is the thing that creates your experience of life in that moment. That's what the whole first two lessons are about, trying to get us to slow down, wake up, question anew, look again at the conditioning, the brainwashing, the acculturation, the teaching, whatever you want to call it, that each one of us has been given, and question, am I really feeling this because somebody stood me up for a lunch meeting? Or am I feeling this because I've chosen an interpretation of this situation and I've poured my mind energy into it, and I'm generating my experience. I'm generating the hurt feelings, the negative emotion. I remember watching a YouTube video where somebody was saying, listen, let's take a look at this dynamic of how you're creating your upset. So let's imagine that you show up for a meeting, for a lunch meeting with one of your friends, and the friend doesn't show up. What's the first thing that goes through your mind? And the person responded, they blew me off, they don't value me, they're mad at me about something, you know, they don't care about the relationship. There were four or five that just, you know, rapid fire were coming out of this person. And then the interviewer said, okay, now, how long have you known this person? Well, about 7 years. Okay. And would you consider this person a fairly good friend? Well, not my best friend, but, you know, a good friend and a business associate or whatever. Okay. Now, let's think about all of the various things that might have happened that would keep this person from making a lunch appointment with you. And within, you know, the next 30 seconds to a minute, this person had listed maybe 15 things. Traffic problems, the car broke down, tire, got stuck in a crisis trying to help a family member with a health issue. Just a whole list of things. And the interviewer says, okay, that's good. That's very good. You've got a nice creative mind going there. He said, now, think about this. There's like 15 to 20 different things that might have happened in that person's life to prevent them from making the appointment with you. And notice which one you went to first. They don't value me. They're blowing me off. They don't care about the relationship. They don't like me. They don't want to be in a friendship with me anymore. All of the negative things based on me, me, me. And the light bulb went off for the person that was being interviewed. That's what the whole first two lessons of the Way of Mastery are trying to get us to understand. That's why we talk about the Reality Management Worksheet. Because every time my mind throws up a picture that leads me to feel a negative emotion, a negative conclusion about myself or somebody else, I could instantly know three things. Number one, it's a lie or based on a falsehood. Number two, this is an old tape playing in my mind. This is not about the current situation. And number three, if I take an action from that, I speak from it or I take an action from it, I'm just going to make my life worse. I cannot improve my life by pouring negative energy into it. So instead, I could pick up a reality management worksheet. And in the first three steps, I could map out what my mind is doing to create this upset and what my mind thinks has to happen in the world outside of me for me to get better. And then I could do the goal-canceling process. I could do this stepping into the internal, asking to be shown, stepping into connecting with the higher power, higher resource, intuition, insight, and watch what gets revealed. I can ask to be shown, as we do in every worksheet, a better, a different, a more integrated way to look at the life circumstance than the negative interpretation I've thrown on this situation. I could ask to be shown, as happens with the Byron Katie worksheet, what is my life like? How do I feel when I believe this negative thought? And then in the next thing, after I've spent some time thinking about how my life feels to believe the negative thought, then I might spend some time thinking about what would my life be like if I gave up this negative thought, if I didn't believe it? What does that feel like? Well, that's essentially what we're being asked to take a look at here on page 50 in The Way of Mastery, and we're in lesson 4. And it says, what are you doing with your thought to create a quality of the solar system that you've decided to allow, in which the planet of your awareness can spin and live and express? Are you filling yourself with negative conclusions about your life and your existence and the patterns of interaction around you? Are you spending your time generating anger and frustration and resentment and bitterness? Or are you spending your time, are you choosing to spend your time understanding that every negative emotional experience you have is simply self-created? And just look at it with innocence and say, wow, look at all this rage I'm generating. I wonder if I take a breath or two and turn the focus inside and ask myself, how am I generating this anger? I wonder what I might see differently. If I ask myself, I wonder what I'm making this situation mean that makes it so effortless for me to justify this anger, which we've already learned in the last lesson, we're going to feel anger, but please stop justifying it. Stop rationalizing it as being caused by someone or something outside of yourself. Take responsibility for what you're creating in your experience of life, moment to moment. And that's what we're being called to here in the fifth paragraph on this page 50. What quality of solar system have you decided to allow, in which the planet of your own awareness can spin and live and express? And I have wonderful news for you. If you've decided you want to have less anger, less sadness, less fear, less hurt, less frustration in your life, thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, there are tools available on whyagain.com that you can download for free. Or you can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains a couple of those tools that you could begin applying in your life. You could demonstrate to yourself that you value peace. You value respect. You value compassion. You value being able to see the truth of creation rather than all of these negative perceptions your mind has been trained to generate. How could you demonstrate that to yourself? By spending your time and your energy applying that tool to the negative thoughts and negative emotions that arise. And as you do, and you dismantle the false perceptions and the negative emotions that are generated by them, it will be effortless. Increasingly less effort will be needed for you to see the truth of your nature as this energy of creation expressing in form, as the truth of your brother and sister as a being of brilliance and light, who's either acting in a way that's demonstrating their brilliance, or they've temporarily forgotten, or they have yet to discover their brilliance. And if you're able to see the truth of their nature and hold that energy and that truth in their presence, it might just open the door for them to see that. What do you value? What have you used your creative power of mind energy to create in your life? The next paragraph reads, desire is everything. Now, already in this lesson, we've had a statement that says desire is. Desire is that energy which brings forth all waves of creation out of the depth of the ocean of creation itself. Here it's said a little bit more directly, desire is everything. The text goes on to say, the simple exercise we have given you will begin to free up the blocks within you, and you will rediscover the innocence of desire. Then you can begin to expand upon it, to take a few moments to learn to live deliberately, asking yourself, what do I truly want? And your consciousness will relax into the innocence of the question. What do I truly want? What is it in my heart that keeps calling to me, keeps compelling me? The text goes on, because your mind shines forth like a sunbeam to the sun from the mind of the Creator, when you ask the question, pictures will begin to arise, feelings will begin to arise. And I say unto you, they are symbols and expressions of what the Creator wants to bring forth through you. You may say, every time I look in my heart and every time I allow myself to feel it, what I really want is to put my arms around people. I want to let people know how much I love them. Why fear such a desire? Do you say, it's too overwhelming, I don't know how I'll be accepted? If so, who cares how you will be accepted? What really matters is how you accept yourself. What if by feeling that desire, new pictures began to come to you? For example, suddenly you realized, what I want to do is join the Peace Corps. Perhaps that very decision would be like putting yourself in a solar system where you can spin as your own planet. What if going and being in the Peace Corps could be the very pathway through which you learn to receive the great joy of letting your love out to the world? But if you fear desire, how could you ever know these things? What comes up for you when you ask the question? Think about it. Sit with it. It might be, I want to have so much wealth. And I see that the thought says, oh no, wealth is bad. However, if you allow yourself to continue to ask the question, a deeper answer will emerge, such as, what I want is to be able to go to all the hungry children on the planet and feed them. That's why I want to be wealthy. Could it not be that the desire to feed the world is the Creator's desire to speak through you? To use you in a way that affects transformation upon your planet? Can you see that by blocking the feeling of desire, you might just be blocking yourself from hearing what you keep praying for over and over again? You pray, Father, reveal thy purpose to me. And then you feel the desire and you say, oops, excuse me, Father, I've got to get rid of this desire first. Desire in the heart is where you will discover the phone line that links you to the will of the Creator. Expressing what would be expressed through you. If you do not trust desire, you are literally saying that you've decided not to trust your Creator. That is a statement not just to be brushed aside. So we'll read it again. If you do not trust desire, you're literally saying you do not trust your Creator. If you do not trust desire as it wants to flow through you, you're saying you do not trust the wisdom of creation. You do not trust your Creator. In healing the conflict around desire, now that you know what it truly is, please learn to be patient with yourself. Please learn to be patient with yourself. Be gentle with yourself. And that's a practice to be cultivated, like all of these other practices. Be patient with yourself. Be gentle with yourself. And that's as far as we're going to go today. We have the second hour is going to be a replay. Michael and Jeannie are occupied elsewhere. And I have some time to take comments and questions, or I will start the second hour. How's it landing for you? What do you have that you'd like to ask or suggest or make a comment on? 563-999-3581. The second hour is going to be a review of the wake-up sheet. I have great hopes that this process of slowly going through and opening yourself to questioning is as beneficial to you as it is to me. And I look forward to proceeding again tomorrow and all of next week until we're through this, until it feels complete. If you have any comments or questions, please email them or call when we start up again. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And this is the second part of our show today, the review of the wake-up sheet. Blessings.
Beyond that, today I'd like to review the principle and the steps in the forgiveness process. And when we're talking about forgiveness, we're looking to reverse the world's thinking about forgiveness. You know, there's an interesting quote that comes out of the mouth of Vladimir Lenin, who's the originator of the whole communist philosophy. And what Lenin says is, if you want to destroy a culture, all you have to do is change the meaning of its words. Well, so what are words? You know, what different? You know, so you change the meaning of a few words. What does that mean? Well, you only have access in terms of a common possibility or process to things that you have a common language about. If you change the meaning of a word, people don't understand that that meaning has been changed, then the true process involved is lost to the culture. And that's what's happened with the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, which we're working to reestablish and make available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. There's nothing to believe about what we're doing. In fact, powerful, healthy skepticism is desirable for every mind engaging in this process. Don't believe a word I've got to say. I invite you to take the tool, put the pen to the paper, and put it to work. What you will find there is first century Aramaic forgiveness. Now, we live in a culture that because the meaning of the word forgive was changed and the Greek idea of pardoning was substituted, forgiveness has been disappeared. So now we live in a culture that by and large goes like this. You did something terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll let you off the hook. I'll forgive you. Now, when I recognize that if there's pain inside of me, my pain is mine, then letting someone else off the hook for the pain that's inside of me. And, you know, you've all heard me deliver the tongue-in-cheek line that I so like to use that says, notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, that you're the only one that was there every time. Your pain is about you. It is not about anybody else. Your frustration is about you. It's not about your spouse. It's not about your children. It's not about anything else. Your rage is about you. It's not about the person you project it on. It's not about the person you scream at. Your rage is about you. Your grief, your guilt, your fear, your terror, your hatred, your vengeance. You say, I hate this person. Well, here's a piece of news. The hatred that one holds does more damage to the vessel in which it's held, that is your own physiology, than anybody upon whom you pour it. It's about you. It's not about anybody else. If you recognize that there are untoward energies in your life experience that you'd like to be through with, then you're going to have to figure out or find out how to remove those energies. Screaming, yelling, raging, bullying, letting other people off the hook isn't going to change that inside of you. But there is a process which was taught 2,000 years ago. And this is what we're working to reestablish the understanding of and make available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Because without this understanding, without this tool, people walk around with these internalized energies that they blame on everybody else. And there is no resolution without forgiveness. Now, most people hear that and they say, oh, so if I don't let them off the hook, then I don't get to heal. Please, never, ever forgive anyone for anything. And I've heard many people say, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I have to forgive myself. No. Please never forgive yourself for anything. If you choose to let yourself or someone off the hook because they or you have done something inappropriate, that's a very nice thing. Do it. But call it what it is, because if you misname it, then you will delete the actual possibility of forgiveness happening. So if I choose to let someone who's, you know, really off the wall, off the hook for what they've done, then I have pardoned them. And that's an appropriate thing too. If I've done a behavior that I'm ashamed of and embarrassed about, and I choose to pardon myself, then I let myself off the hook for that. That's a nice thing to do. But it is only pardoning when you do that. That's all it is. It is not forgiveness. Our culture has taught us that that's forgiveness. And it always amazes me how many people I hear from who tell me about how, oh, yeah, well, I already understood that. Yeah, I got that one, Michael. But, you know, I already forgave my mother and my father. Excuse me, did you notice that you called letting somebody else off the hook forgiveness? Well, yeah, but that's not what I meant. I really did understand it. It's like baloney. This understanding was disappeared almost 2,000 years ago, and it's just being reestablished now in the world. I get hundreds of people who come to me after a workshop and go, oh, that was a nice refresher, man. I was good to hear, but I already understood it. It's like, oh, okay, tell me how you forgive. I remember working with one fellow who was into some kind of an Eastern meditative, whatever process that they were in. And, oh, yeah, the core of what we do is forgiveness. I said, well, tell me how you forgive. And he kind of looked at me a little bit cross-eyed. I said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, if the core of your process is forgiveness, tell me how it is that you forgive. Well, we just forgive. You know that's just like, and this went on for about 10 minutes. He couldn't say a word about how to forgive because we haven't been taught that. If you're not familiar with the first century Aramaic Yeshua and what he taught about forgiveness, in my experience, now I'm willing to be corrected. If there's somebody out there who can show me in writing where the process exists somewhere else on the planet, then I'm going to go study it because there are probably refinements that I still don't understand that I'll get from it. But I haven't found it anywhere in 45 years, except in two places. One is in the first century Aramaic teachings of the man named Yeshua. And the second place is in A Course in Miracles, identical description of how to forgive. So what I'd like to do is review that today, just to kind of, you know, put it in a synoptic form, step by step, here's how, and I'm not talking about we're going to do the worksheet at this point. I want to just key into the principles of forgiveness. First of all, forgiveness is useful whenever there's denial. And a working definition of denial is, I have some sort of turmoil or pain inside of me. Think about or talk about someone else as cause or something else as cause. So that conversation looks like you made me mad. You know, when you did that, you really hurt me. Well, what you said really upset me. If you just wouldn't talk like that, then I wouldn't have to go into this rage. You know, that situation was really disturbing for me. All of those phrases are phrases of denial. When I think of or talk about something outside of me, as though it is the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial. Nothing, and no one can cause anything to happen inside of you that isn't there. It's not possible. So if you go into a fit of rage when someone does behavior A, that behavior didn't cause your rage. You held the rage, and that behavior triggered it. If you talk about it as the cause of your rage, then you have to dissociate from the cause of your rage. When you dissociate from the cause of your rage, then your rage is stored in a hidden place within your own mind, which is the cellular structure of your body, and your body is now diseased. You are dissociated from that content, and whenever you dissociate from content, you wear it on your sleeve. That is, everybody in town knows it's there. The denial inhibits your mind from showing you the evidence that you most need to look at. And so forgiveness is useful. There are other places where it's useful as well, but it is particularly useful when there is denial that results in dissociated content. The problem with dissociated content is that we create out of that which we dissociate from first and foremost. Because by the very simple act of pressing it down and dissociated from it, we have added energy to it. What you add energy to sets up literal, measurable, high-frequency waves that leave your physiology and call to all the world around you to come and do it to you. That's what I mean by wearing it on your sleeve. And, of course, they're going to show up. So how do you carry out this process of forgiveness? What are the steps? Well, the first thing you want to do when you find yourself talking about someone else is notice that as you talk about someone else's cause, in order to hide a part of yourself from yourself, you have to cut off your breath. So the first step is, if you notice yourself talking about how they made you mad, or thinking it, you don't have to say you made me mad, but if you start treating someone in your mind as though they're the problem in your life, then you're in denial and dissociation. So the first step is to breathe. And then recognize that your mind, and this is an automatic sort of thing, recognize that your mind has an object of attention outside of itself. Or you can be your own object of attention. It's interesting. In the Aramaic language, you are your own neighbor. Your true self is neighbor to the false self. The false self is neighbor to the true self. And so the next step, once you begin to breathe, is to recognize there's an object of attention involved in your disturbance and your upset. The next step, once you've acknowledged that, is to identify that there is an unmet goal in your mind that's being held for that object of attention. And how can you tell if that's true? If there is any form of pain or turmoil when you're contemplating that object of attention and or your unmet goal, then you know that that's what's going on. So let's say, you know, the person who has a challenge with their spouse, and, you know, they just have to look at their spouse, and they're in rage or frustration. Say, yeah, when they do that, their behavior, you know, they're just so, you know, I just can't stand them anymore. So in order to say that, you've got a goal in your mind, causing your mind to build a picture of your spouse out of your own dissociated content. You really have a problem, and that problem is going to lead to the destruction of that relationship if you don't do something about it. So the next step is just to notice that you have a goal. The goal may be totally and completely unconscious. As you start to do this step, you become more aware of the goals that drive your internal content. And whenever you load a goal that causes internal content based in any form of hostility or fear to be activated, then your guidance system is going to be compromised. Your perception is going to be defiled by the content that you've dissociated from, resonated or activated by the goal that you're holding. So when you recognize that you have an unmet goal, that's the next step in the process of forgiveness. And identifying specifically and exactly what that goal is, you know, well, I just want them to be obedient. I want them to cooperate. I want them to do what I want them to do when I want them to do it can be the goal. Now, you'll notice that if that's a dynamic that happens in your relationships, you can go back and find that you had a power person who could have said exactly the same words about you. I want you to do what I want you to do when I want you to do it, and if you won't, I'll beat you into submission. Whether I do it with a look or a breath or a fist doesn't matter. With words, with rewards, or with the removal of favors and punishment, with threats, you have a power person that did exactly the same thing. This is the core of the issue that needs to be healed. You know, we do a workshop called Healing Through Relationships. When I first started to do that workshop, it was called Healing Your Relationships. And then I realized that there are no diseased relationships. Pardon me, relationships. Every relationship is a perfect creation. And every relationship will perfectly reflect you exactly what it is that you need to deal with. And so when you can see that dynamic, then it is in the context of relationship that you will be shown what it is that you need to forgive. How can you tell if there's something you need to forgive? Are you in some form of pain or turmoil? Well, yeah, but it's their fault that I am. Okay, but we've got a test for determining whether or not something you're feeling is yours or not. And the test for determining that is, are you feeling it? If you're feeling it, but your mind has got all kinds of thoughts and words about them and how they did it to you, stop. You're just repeating your power person pattern. Notice your power person looked at you and went, and look how you did it, and you did it to me, and it's all your fault, and you're just carrying on the tradition of finding somebody else to blame. Time to stop. Recognize the unmet goal. Once you recognize and identify specifically what that goal is, then you want to make sure that as you enter into the core of the forgiveness process, that you establish and maintain the active presence of love in your mind. Now, if you've got all kinds of pain and disturbance that you've never looked at and you've always blamed somebody else for it, this is not an easy step. This is a step that takes time to learn to do, to hold the condition of love in your mind, regardless of what's going on inside of you or outside of you. And this is the act of maintaining your human life. You know, we have a simple definition in this work of a human life, and that is hold a newborn child. If you recognize that that awesome presence of love is life itself, then you come to the point where you refuse to give it up and you choose to maintain it 24/7, 365, whatever's going on inside or outside of you. And it's a key in the forgiveness process because it is the active presence of love that dissolves the hidden parts of the mind that contain the hostility, the fear, the frustration, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the self-condemnation, whatever it happens to be. And so it's necessary to maintain that condition of love, or at least be in the practice of moving toward it. Once you've established that condition within your mind, and one of the best ways I know to do that is to imagine holding a newborn and tap into the essence of that newborn, strengthen that essence. Some people go out into the, you know, nature, and they feel that connection in nature. Jeannie does one-on-one work over the phone with people, and there was a woman she worked with a couple of years ago that had to literally physically go and pick up her cat and pet her cat. It was the only thing that inspired her to love. So whatever it takes to establish that condition in your mind, that's the process. And again, if you come from a world based in lots of hostility and fear, it's going to be quite a practice to get to where you can establish that and maintain that. But that's one of the steps in the process of forgiveness. Then, and this is for most people the strangest idea in the whole process, in the Aramaic language, the word that's been translated as forgive is the word shebag, and it means to cancel. So if forgiveness means to cancel, what do I cancel? Do I cancel you? Would that be forgiving you? Well, no, that's murder. Would I cancel myself? No, that's suicide. I can always cancel the unmet goal that causes my mind to use my dissociated content to build its brain's image of you. And so the unmet goal that we identified in the earlier step, now you want to cancel it, which seems absolutely ludicrous because, after all, Michael, I deserve to have that. And, you know, if you establish a goal, gee, I want someone to be cooperative and loving toward me, and I deserve that, I absolutely agree with you. You deserve to have everyone in your life cooperate and create a space of support for you. And if you have disturbance or upset when they're not, then your goal is for them to support you. And the reason you would cancel that goal is not because you don't want it, not because you can't have it, not because you don't deserve it, not because there's anything wrong with that goal, because it's an absolutely wonderful, perfect goal that it's appropriate for everyone to hold. The reason you cancel it is because every time you load that goal into your mind, and this is a repeat of the power person cycle, every time you load that goal into your mind, it accesses or recruits the hidden dissociated content based in turmoil or pain. So the canceling of the goal is the key way into the dissociated part of the mind. It's the way to go back and undo the denial and get direct access to what has been hidden. And so by canceling the goal, two things happen. The projection of that dissociated content into your brain's image of others collapses. You now have more room in your mind for awareness to come. At the same time as that collapses, a pathway is opened directly into the dissociated content. For most people, when they deny and go into dissociation, they never get to see that dissociated content directly again. They only get to see that content when it is used to build their brain's image of someone else. And that content shows up, and the way you can tell that it's that person's content showing up is they're the one who's feeling the effects of it. They can prattle on and blame and talk about how it's all everybody else's fault, but notice that they're the one who's in pain and turmoil. So when I cancel the goal, I collapse the projection that it's about someone else, and I open a pathway into the hidden part of my mind. Now I can come back into, from the state of love, direct contact with the hidden part of my own mind. For the first time, when people begin to forgive, they start to see their own dissociated content and come back into direct rather than indirect relationship with that content. When you come back into direct relationship with that content, you have the opportunity then to heal that content. And so the next step in the forgiveness process is to cancel the unmet goal and breathe. This allows the space for the dissociated content to surface. Now, for most people, when they're facing some form of turmoil, pain, fear, rage, guilt, grief, or upset, this is not the first time in their bloodline that this has happened. There tends to be inherited patterns involved in those things that take us over seemingly against our own will and choice. And when you recognize that there are generally inherited patterns involved, and you can admit those patterns. Most people are in denial about those patterns. Oh, no, I don't want to condemn my father and my mother. I don't want to see them as bad or wrong or ever having been anything other than perfect. Oh, my God, then I'd really be in trouble. You've got to be honest. You've got to love truth more than what you've been brainwashed to do. And so to be able to honestly acknowledge where those flaws were and allow that part of the mind to come forward for healing. These issues tend to be generational. You know, how many times have we known someone who maybe was separated from a parent when they were a small infant? So there's no way that the modeling of the parent, you know, perhaps within days of conception, one parent disappears. And someone looks at this young man or this young woman 20 years later and says, boy, I remember his father so well, and he's just like him. He turns his head the same way. He cocks his jaw the same way, and he uses the same kind of language his father did. How's that possible? He never even knew his father. His father died, you know, a week after he was conceived. These patterns are generational. They are stored within the genetic structure. And of course, if one had a father with those kinds of patterns or a mother, you can pretty much rest assured that that father or mother had a parent who had similar patterns. And these things have gone on for generations, which means there's a huge quantity of energy and information to be processed. The reason why the earlier step was to reestablish the presence of love is because in order to process something that is less than love, love has to be conscious, active, and present. It is the active presence of love that dissolves the untoward content, that which you're ready to get rid of. There's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into awareness is 9 bits, a measly 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing. It's like the smallest speck of what's really going on. And once you recognize that, then you realize that there's a huge quantity of data under the surface that needs to be moved. If we have, and you know, for the sake of our example, we're going to call this mind that sees 9 bits of information out of 10,000 brain cells firing. We're going to call that a 9-bit mind. If I have in computer language a 9-bit processor and trillions of bits of data to process, how long is it going to take to process all that data? Not going to happen. You know, you look at some of the supercomputers that they've got, and you know, there are programs where you can sign up your computer to allow its processing power to be used for huge scientific experiments that take just large amounts of processing power. So when your computer's not being used and you leave it online, let's say, for instance, an institution like a large university might have access to your computer's processing power to use it to do calculations that otherwise might take years with the computing power they have. But when they have tens of thousands of people who sign in and support that, then they have the computing power of all of those computers. Well, this is kind of the same sort of thing. If you've got to process all this generational garbage on your own, the chances of ever getting through it are slim to none. What Yeshua taught 2,000 years ago is that inside of every one of us, available to us, if we invite it into activity, is a super processor, so to speak, a power that is beyond our own comprehension and capability. In Aramaic, it was called Ruach HaKodesh. And Ruach HaKodesh are the words that have been translated by the Greeks as some sort of a disembodied spirit being called the Holy Spirit. But in Aramaic, there's no context of a disembodied spirit being, and it is not male. There is a feminine elemental force in us, actual operative energy within us, that when we invite it into activity, will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. Most people sit around most of their lives trying to figure out their problems. Years and years and years and years trying to figure out their problems. When if they would engage in forgiveness and invite that elemental force into action, their problems would be dissolved and they'd be taught the truth directly from the source. Now, those who stand in weakness don't want you to disconnect from them as your authority, because they have all kinds of benefits that accrue by you seeing them as your authority. We invite you to disconnect from external authority. The power is in you. It was given to you at conception. Your world has taught you to ignore it because your world wants to control you. And I don't care what institution you're looking at, whether it's the educational institutions, the religious institutions, the legal institutions, they all want you to see them as your authority. Or people want to hook you up to a false authority. You go back to Yeshua and he says, deny me, no problem. Now you look at how many authorities force you into denying what he himself told you to do. He says, but don't deny the one that is in you. I come to connect you to that spirit of truth. And so listen to that. There is a power in you that is there for you to coordinate with and get support from. We're not here to connect you to any other authority but that one. You invite that power to go to work in you. You've canceled your goal. That sets a stage. And now you invite that power to go to work, and she will. And you will see dramatic effects happen in your life if, in sincerity, you begin to do that. It may take some time, but as you begin to do it, you will see just monumental progress occurring. So you recognize that help is needed, and you ask Ruach HaKodesh, and we usually just short form that to Ruka, to support you, and you breathe. And as you breathe, once you have the goal, you've set the space of love, you canceled the goal, then recognize that help is needed. You'll start to notice, if you invite that help in and then just breathe and be still, that new content starts to come to mind. You'll be in the process of being taught from the true source of real knowledge. And as you step into that and listen and breathe, you then, in completing the process, look for, from that connected space of love, from the truth of your being, look for a new loving goal that you can hold toward the object of attention that was not meeting the goal that you held initially. So you start out early in the process by establishing or locating the goal in your mind, and then you cancel the goal in your mind that you hold for them. And now in this final step in the process, you establish a new goal based in love toward them. And as you do that, you will find shifts and changes happening in your energy field. You will see diseases disappear, physical, mental, emotional, relationship, financial. You'll see things that just evaporate and disappear from your life in an instant. And as you commit yourself to that new goal based in love, watch the gifts that you're able to give to yourself and all of life around you, and watch the empowerment that comes as a result. It's absolutely awesome. And so that's the review I wanted to do on the forgiveness process, just to kind of go through the whole thing and bring a reminder to mind. We just did the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop yesterday, and last night it occurred that as I was tapping into what I was going to do on the show today, the guidance was just review the whole forgiveness process and what's involved in it. And so, of course, we're open to your questions and your thoughts about that process. If anything isn't clear or there's some details that need to be filled in, we'd love to hear your voice. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. And I know we've got Dr. Tim, or I think we've got Dr. Tim with us, so I'd love to hear if Dr. Tim has any pieces to fill in that synopsis from his experience or anything to share with us. Dr. Tim, how do you do today, sir?
Well, I'm doing beautifully, and I listened and soaked it up and thought it was a wonderful deepening and a refresher all at the same time. So when I hear you talk about it, what really gets to me over these 10 years or so that I've been exposed to this work is I'm listening to you, learning to understand it better.
Absolutely. We teach best out what you're most need to learn, right?
Well, but you are understanding the process so much more deeply than you did 5 and 10 years ago. And it's just a pleasure to be learning through that process with you and get it at deeper and deeper levels. And that would be all I would add. I don't think I would touch any other part of it. I'm just soaking it up.
You know, I started teaching this whole process, having uncovered it from the Aramaic and the teachings of Yeshua. And it's kind of interesting, you know, historically when I go back, and as I touched into this canceling of the goal and such, I was actually in Fort Lauderdale, and I had a Wednesday night class actually at the Unity Center there. We used to have anywhere from 80 to 150 people every week. And I would talk about this canceling of the goal, and it was just, you know, it was something that came through the translations of the Aramaic, and the talk about that was it, and that was how forgiveness worked. And it was just like kind of, that's just what it is. And then I get people who were in that audience who come to me the next week and say, wow, I started canceling those goals you were talking about, and man, you should see what happened. And I started to pay attention. I wasn't doing it at that time. I was just passing on what I'd come to understand from the Aramaic. And then I'd have people who would actually take that and put it to work and say, man, that's changed everything in my life. And I sat up and took notice. And so I systematized a little more and started to teach it more strongly. And I get more people come back. And I then, of course, started to do it myself. And it's like, wow, this is so cool. I don't have a clue what's going on here. I don't have a clue why it works. But, man, it works. And then, of course, it took me 25 years to understand why and how it works, what Yeshua is actually teaching us. And to me, one of the exciting things, if we can when I get to the point where we've got the funding to take the manuscript translation work, to put together a team and take it to the next level, is what else is there that we don't understand yet? And as we get that started, you know, having built the brain cells, I think I'll be better fit to be able to understand it when we get more of the translation work done. So I'm pretty excited about that project coming together, and actually we're going to create part of the whole process of what we're doing in Costa Rica. And so far we're looking at creating a crowdfunding project to fund the whole thing, the Costa Rica, the Heartland, the manuscript project, the whole thing, and take the whole thing to the next level. And we're moving in the direction, at least at this point, and I'm certainly open to feedback, but we're moving in the direction of creating Heartland University of First Century Aramaic Forgiveness and Healing, and making that kind of the lead point in the whole project. And then everything that falls under that umbrella would be the manuscript project, taking the translation work to the next level, the publishing from it, the just, you know, everything. The project in Costa Rica, which will include television production, and, you know, just moving everything to the next level. So, but it took me a good 25 years to really begin to understand it. And you were around in the days where, you know, 10 years ago, I was basically saying you cancel your goal, and I knew, like, you know, maybe 10% of how it worked. And it's really over the last 8 or 10 years that it's developed, oh, okay, now I get it. That's what that meant. That's how that works. Ah, there it is. That's how that works. And so I realized that Ruka was teaching me in that time period. And I hear all this while I thought I was figuring it out, but I've become very clear I wasn't figuring it out. I was being taught. And so, you know, I invite everybody to open your direct connection. Yeshua was so on track when he said, deny me, I don't care. I don't come in my own name. He's, you know, he talked to them. He said, you want somebody to come in their own name? Forget it. I'm not interested. Don't put me on that pedestal. Now, there are people who put him on a pedestal because they need somebody outside of themselves to be their source and their pedestal. It's all a fraud if you actually believe what the man said. But what he did say is, be careful about the denial of the one that is in you that I'm attempting to connect you with. That's the real teacher that you need to connect with. And I realize that that's where the understanding has come from, is just being in that space of willingness to be taught. And we invite everyone, as you invite Ruka to Kudsa to go to work, invite her to teach you directly and be willing to give up everything you've ever been taught to get it direct from the source. Because most people are out there forcing fear-based doctrines and dogmas and stories on people, are totally stuck in their own story. They have no relationship with Ruka whatsoever. They're just playing their own ego-based game and trying to force others into it. Open the space, and we'll each be taught individually. And it's awesome. And we've got time for a caller or two. So if you have a question, you know, based on what we just unfolded, the process of understanding first century Aramaic forgiveness is not an easy one because we've been brainwashed in a whole different direction. And, of course, the reason for this show is to teach and learn what it is that we most need to learn. And this process of forgiveness tops the list for me. And so if you'd been at a workshop, I know when we finished the workshop yesterday, finished doing WISE, this happened to me again, several people, you know, came up with their questions. And if you were sitting in that audience yesterday, and I just covered what I just covered, which is what I did yesterday with Why Is This Happening to Me Again, what would be your question for us? And if not, then let's move to the next space of this process of forgiveness and recognizing that the smallest irritation, it's kind of a trick thing that I do at the opening of the Why workshop when we present the worksheet, and I say, you know, just pick a small issue. You know, probably 60% of people go for their big major issue. And it's interesting. After every workshop, somebody comes up to me, it happened yesterday, I ask people, you know, just take a small issue. And, you know, it's the, like the major life issue. First worksheet, I'm going to do the major life issue. The truth is that the small issues, the things on the surface, like the little tiny irritations, I love what the course says about them, the tiny irritations that we have cover the deepest rage. And so ultimately, even those small issues lead to deeper things. You'll notice that in several religious traditions, there's a use of beads. There's a reason for the use of beads. The beads are a symbolic way of traveling down into the dissociated mind. So someone who holds a set of beads and says a special set of words, by the way, the words that people use on their beads are not prayers. That's another misnomer. That's another thing that we've had the word meaning change. We've been taught that, you know, prayer is tapping into the cosmic gift catalog and telling God what God should be doing or praising or whatever the non-being mind is made up about prayer. None of the words you speak are prayers. In the original Aramaic sense, the meaning of that word has been changed, just like the meaning of the word forgiveness has been changed. So the word prayer in Aramaic means to set a trap for God, which sounds a little strange when you first think about it. But if you think about the fact that we are energetic beings and we live in this energy system where we are all connected, then when I become receptive to or energetically align myself to receive that human life I was given, the active presence of love, then I am engaged in prayer. I become the trap, captures the active presence of love in my physiology and radiates it out into the world. If you think about a television antenna, you know, I want to watch channel 4. I have to have an antenna for channel 4, you know, if I'm not working with a cable station. I put an antenna on the roof, and if the antenna is the right shape of an antenna and it's aligned properly, then I get a clear, crisp picture of channel 4. So the antenna is a trap for channel 4, brings the signal in and feeds it through my television set. I have this beautiful, crisp, clear picture and crisp, clear sound. In exactly the same way, when I align to be receptive to the presence of active love in my physiology, I'm engaged in prayer. Certain words can support me moving in that direction, but the words are not the prayer. Again, we've been tricked. Babble words, and then you'll be praying. No, align with love, and then you're praying. If you say certain words, then that's petition or supplication. Different thing. So when I choose to align with that active presence of love, and that's the step where in the forgiveness process we're suggesting that you tap into that presence of love, whether it's through the holding of a newborn or petting your cat or stepping out into nature, imagining stepping into nature, whatever aligns you with the active presence of love, that's prayer. And so you bring that active presence of love forward, and as you do, because you have been given the power of choice and will, you can initiate an energy that is out of alignment with love. You can make up things. You look at most of the world. You know, the ancient scripture said there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. And boy, are we there. And so people have interacted with others and made up all kinds of stories about rage and guilt and grief and blame, and you did it and it's your fault and I'm going to kill you, and if I can just beat you up or kill you or get you into submission, then everything will be all right in my life. And we've got a whole false world based on all of that insanity. The beautiful thing is that if that dynamic that is hidden in the dissociated mind is brought forward directly to the active presence of love, which is, in fact, the Creator's mind, The system is so designed that anything out of alignment with that love instantly and automatically begins to dissolve and fall apart. So we can interact with each other. It's kind of like this lateral interaction. I can interact with you, and I can do rage, and you can do fear, and they can do guilt, and somebody else can do shame. And we got this whole thing going. We go, yeah, look at this, man. This is really real, isn't it? Lateral. But then when you go to the vertical and you invite the active presence of love, when you step into prayer, when you become receptive to the active presence of love, the activity of that mind dissolves everything that isn't true in you. Everything that you and your bloodline, me and my bloodline, have made up that never belonged in a human system simply begins to dissolve in the presence of that active mind of love. It's an awesome thing to understand. I love how the Course in Miracles says it. The Course in Miracles says you must bring that which you do not want to that which you do. So when I bring my hostility and fear-based separated thoughts into the space, then that which is not love automatically begins to dissolve. And that's one of the reasons why religions were taking this to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Because as we do, we open a space where more and more people can incarnate as true human beings, as the active presence of love. More and more people understand the ability to hold the space of love, to be the space of love for themselves and for each other. And there's going to come a point where critical mass will be reached and the whole game will shift and move. And that's why we're doing basically everything we do, is to create that critical mass shift. And we invite you to participate. So not listen. This isn't just an intellectual journey. In fact, the reason for the forgiveness process, the reason for the tools, is to be out of your mind, to be able to collapse the output of your body's mind and then live, you know, Paul described it as the mind that was in Christ. That mind is in you. And that's not a religious idea. The mind of the active presence of love is in you as you and how you started out. Be receptive to and restored to that mind, and all of your insanity will begin to dissolve. When individually and collectively we dissolve our insanity, everything starts to shift and change.